Well, hello there, everyone. Yay. Chapter 3. Aren't we lucky? We're going on to chapter 3. Yay. So I was just thinking about this and I was talking to my daughter. She said, perhaps I should do a bit more of an intro. Well, yeah, I guess the intro or the stories that come to it will be really great. And gradually they'll just unravel themselves as I start talking about things or places I've been or things that have happened to me spiritually, 4D crazy things in the seeing, the feeling, the hearing and the being with life and work and the 4D. So, you know, I guess in a way, I should say again, my name is Tiffany Bees. I'm a naturopath and orthobiognomist, and some would say a medium, but to be honest with you, more things, I guess I would like to think of myself as a teacher. In fact, when I went into the Akashic Records and you ask your purpose, that is exactly what came up. My purpose was a teacher. And so I kind of encompassed this completely. I'm even a yoga teacher, you could say. When I was in India at about the age of 25, I went to an ashram. That was pretty amazing to find out more about meditation. The reason I went to India, in fact, was to learn about yoga and meditation. Because at the time, my dad was really into TM. And I went, you know what? I'm just going to go to source. I'm going to go where yoga and meditation actually originated thousands of years ago as a practice, many, many thousands of years ago. And so actually that's what I did. And funny story, so I didn't really know where I was going. I just trusted, unbeknownst to me, what this trust actually did. And myself and the guy I was traveling with, we tended to get to new cities and then you get on a tourist bus to find out where everything is in regards to everything else and what you want to stop and see and what you have seen, because all the beautiful sights of so many different cities are so well worth looking at, from Taj Mahal. Actually, that was closed when we were in India because they were having riots between the Hindu temples and the Muslim temples. That was a bit of a trip. Woo-wee! But so many different sites of so many travelers there have been, and there are so many great things around. And even just to look on our back garden. In fact, when I was walking to work with my partner, I suddenly saw this beautiful grasshopper on a white road. I went, oh, I bet that means something. I forgot to look it up, but that doesn't matter. But it was the fact that we have this beauty that we see every day if we just look a little bit more. Bit more mindfulness, eh? So, anyway, when I was in India, in Delhi, actually, after being on this tour, I asked the lady who was the tour guide, I went, where's the best place I can learn yoga and meditation in an ashram? And she gave me two addresses. One of them was in Bednikatan. Both were actually on the Ganges, further north towards the Himalayas. And one of them was predominantly Hindu, which wasn't necessarily too good, because I don't speak Hindi at that time. Actually, I don't speak it now either. In actual fact, I found this one at Bednikatan, which was right next to the Ganges. And we were basically shown, and this was an ashram that followed Yogananda. If anybody's read the autobiography of a yogi, this is the guy. And his philosophy, which sat so well with me, to be honest, that the Eastern philosophy meets the West. So it's about giving, it's about compassion. The Hindu faith is accepting that there is past lives. We work through stuff, through karma, many different gods, not one God, but they actually all come from one source as it is. And this all sat really well with me. So I found my way to Yogananda's ashram on the Ganges around Bednikatan, and myself, and I just stayed there. The fellow I was traveling with, he went off to Kashmir to find his adventure. And boy, did he have an adventure. He even had a bullet whisk past his ear when he was sitting on a canal boat out there on one of the Kashmir river boats. Ooh, experiences everywhere. Anyway, so sitting at the ashram, so what we learned, first of all, we got up at 6:30. We did 2 hours of meditation. 2 hours of meditation going on with then 2 hours of philosophy, all about the Buddhist faith, about the yoga, about how yoga is actually a science, about the Bhagavad Gita, about Krishna, about all the different gods for 2 hours every day. So philosophy, if you like. in between the meditation and the philosophy classes, we used to go down to the local chai lady in the on the river of the Ganges in her little cafe just outside the ashram. We used to have chai, delicious, hot, sweet tea that warmed the cockles of your heart. And then we came back, we did the philosophy classes. The rest of the day was our own. We often cleaned the ashram or just hung out. We wrote, it was lovely. And then we did two and a half hours of physical hatha yoga in the evening. Dharmananda was the monk who was teaching it there. It was amazing. There were so many different people from all over the world. The Japanese, we had Norwegian, Swedish, English. I myself was English. There was American. It was amazing, the different cultures that just wanted to learn how to be, how to enjoy their bodies in the way it stretched, in the way it physically got strong, in our breath. And so every day we did this 6 days a week. We had a rest day on the Sunday where we did our own thing rather than working on the ashram or working on ourselves. We used to go into town, see how busy it was, how crazy. Unfortunately, I got sick, but that's another story. But having said that, after 3 months of being on the ashram, Dharmananda, he had to go off and do mantra training. So what that entailed was sitting there and singing Om for 4 hours. And of course, that gets you pretty tired with all that vibration going through. And it was about stepping up in the different levels of meditation and the different paths to the one, to enlightenment, so the Hindus believe. And so this was, he asked me, I guess maybe because I was a long stayer, to actually take the class. And you know what? It was fantastic. I so loved it, being able to share the knowledge that I had just been shown for others to better themselves, to feel their bodies. We even ended up doing a headstand for 10 minutes at the end of the 2 hours. It was phenomenal. But Dharmananda also showed yoga as a science. And so I'm very much of a why person. I'm an analyzer. I'm a Virgo. I need to analyze. I need to know why, what, when, how, what else is going on, blah, blah, blah. And so it was really good. So when he taught for myself 3 months every day, 6 days a week, he also said why we did things. So why we did a side bend, how we did a forward bend, what was the point, which organs we would massage, how it would help cleanse the liver. So for me, that was so important for my teaching. And so from then on in, I basically stood up for the last 3 months that I was at the ashram and taught yoga to 20 to 40 people, depending on who was staying. And it's funny, you know, I remember parting words of Dharmananda, the monk who I studied under. And he said, no one religion will ever work for you. You have to take a little bit out of everything. And he's absolutely right. And that's what I see. There is so much good in so many organized religions. If you just take a little bit of the good stuff, it all kind of works. But what I've also figured out from studying and being a bit of a teacher is that they all come down to love, compassion, treat others as you would expect to be treated, and go about your daily business, which is pretty much what it all comes down to. And do good in the world. Stop being mean. Stop letting the damn ego take over and go, oh, I want what you've got. Actually, no, you don't really. Only your ego that wants it. Actually, your body doesn't need it. Your mind doesn't need it. Your spirit and your soul certainly doesn't need it. Don't let the ego keep having it. Don't listen to it. Anyway, I digress. So teaching is really the love, which is why all of these podcasts are coming about. Because if my clients have said, Tiff, tell me what you know. And so this is also part and parcel. This is part of the teaching of my purpose in life that I discovered from the Akashic Records in one of the first times I entered into it. Now, I also want to touch on the fact that we're doing the first couple, two or three, on seeing. Seeing and sensing are two very, very close things. I sense color around people's aura, in people's aura. Other people see. Sensing and seeing, very different. So when I look at somebody and I can see a green, I would actually have to say, I can sense a green. It's like a knowing that there's a green around them. Now, I also want to tick on a little bit at this point on some science. And this is all about synesthesia. Synesthesia is about there are no boundaries between your sensations about what you see, what you touch, what you feel, what you hear. And so this particular little reading I'm going to do is out from a book of a man who tasted shapes. Fascinating. I discovered this book when I was learning psychology in Victoria University in Wellington here. And I'm just going to read you this small one because it kind of relates to what seeing is in so many different ways. This book, The Man Who Tasted Shapes by Richard E. Cytovic, was an amazing book we discovered when I was doing psychology at Victoria University. Anyway, I'll just read you this small passage. Dear Dr. Cytovic, I read the article concerning your work with synesthesia. You have no idea how exciting it is to read someone else's description from a total stranger of an experience that I have never been quite sure wasn't the result of my imagination or being insane. I most often see colours, sound as colours, with a certain sense of pressure on my skin. I've never met anyone else who saw sound. I'm not sure that seeing is the most accurate description. I am seeing, but not with my eyes, if that makes sense. I can't imagine being without my colours. One of the things I love about my husband are the colours of his voice and his laugh. It's a wonderful golden brown with a full of crisp buttery toast, which sounds very odd, I know, but it is very real. So you see how sounds and seeing can be so totally different. So what's actually happening here inside her brain in the different sensations that we have of seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and touching. The boundaries aren't there. And so in some people's nervous system, they get twisted around. And so The Man Who Tastes Shapes, which I'm going to read in the feeling chapter, is fascinating. So synesthesia can happen to, I think they said, 1 in 10,000. And it's about the different senses that meld with each other. Quite fascinating. So psychology, the study of us, it's quite remarkable what human beings can see and can hear and can feel and can be with. Now, continuing on about auras, I don't know whether anybody's aware of aura soma. This is a particular therapy, I guess, or a process by which mixtures of coloured oils and spices are in bottles. The person looks at all the different combinations for, say, yellow and blue, two different greens, white or clear and pink, two different pinks, pink and blue. All these different colours are combinations of oils and spices. They originally came about from Vicky Wall. She was born in 1918. And it was only in her 70s, after she lost her sight due to diabetes type 2, that she started making these herbs and spices in bottles. She originally trained as an apothecary and became also a surgical chiropodist. And unfortunately, because of the type 2 diabetes, she became blind. And because of her training as an apothecary, at night, almost sleepwalking, she would go into her laboratory or kitchen or wherever she would work, and she would make up these different bottles of herbs and spices and oils and waters and have them sit with each other. And she had no real recollection of doing these things at the middle of the night. But because she was blind, she had another sense of seeing other people. So when people came in for a therapy session, so in 1983 they became available and she started working with them, or general public was able to have them, and also practitioners were trained up in them. And so what she saw around people is what their body needed. She didn't actually see their face, but she did feel them, but she saw an aura around them. Just like the daredevil with the energy around them, because they can't see, but they can see so many different things. Back many years ago, my father and I actually visited the place of Vicky Wall, the Aura Soma place in the middle of England. The place felt amazing, so calm, so clean, so sparkly. And they had all of the Aura-Soma bottles up against this glass ball in the actual hall. They also did retreats and training. It was a training center for other practitioners as well, a meditation center for well-being, as well as learning how to meditate. It was a lovely old, old, grand English home. And what they did is when you got there, looked at all of the bottles and you saw which one gravitated you towards it. And for me, I'll always remember it. It was the royal blue and the yellow. And when you look it up, it turns out it's for the old soul. And woo, I'm an old soul. How cool is that? Actually, it's kind of helps me understand why sometimes I feel a little weird or different or not part of something, as I'm sure many of you also feel at times. And this is a feeling that I will go into on another podcast about not feeling or being present or being enjoying what everybody else is enjoying. What is wrong with you? Why don't you find that funny? Or why aren't you entertained quite so easily? So we're going to go into that. It's probably because you're a bit of an older soul or a light worker. And yeah, I'll touch on that another time. So going back to seeing your guides, your loved ones, and your masters, ascended masters. So you can do this in meditation. There are many meditations on YouTube. In fact, my daughter suggested even perhaps I ought to do podcasts of the meditations to find your spiritual guides, to find what your past lives are, to find what your purpose is. There are all specific meditations. Being able to do that, to be able to check in. People have said, how do you see my grandmother? It's like, oh, they just had to turn up in my practice room, to be honest with you. And it was funny, back in the day when I first started seeing people, seeing dead souls, seeing ascended masters, I always used to see their feet first. So I remember one of the first times was these brown, beautifully polished shoes of a gentleman who'd come to visit this person on my table. And he was just lovely, but I saw the shoes up first, and then came the tweed trousers, and then the jacket, the waistcoat, the pocket watch, the way it used to, with the chain back in the day, and then all the way up to his face. So people see spirits or guides or loved ones in very different ways. Now I get a sense, or I can see or feel them, and I have a sense of feeling how they are emotionally. Sometimes when I look over or not look over, the unfocused, you can almost see or feel them smile. So here's a funny story. So myself and a couple of girlfriends, we went off to Masterton. We used to have these witchy poo weekends, and we went into this old house. Apparently it used to be an old GP who used to live there. It was the local surgery or the local doctor's house. Anyway, we all got in, got our suitcases down or our little overnight bags, and we all kind of went down all the way down to the lounge room. All of a sudden, one of my friends went, "Is there a cat here?" And my other friend and I went, don't know, not sure. Anyway, as time wore on, we then all sat down around the lounge and the fire, and there's suddenly two of us suddenly looked straight over at what would have been the kitchen or used to be the kitchen. And also a cat wandered past. And I'm not talking of people, I'm talking spirit cats. Or this particular man, he too had a kind of a tweed jacket on, which is why I'm relating this story. And the lady who sensed something, what she felt this gentleman as well, and she felt the cat. And my other friend, I'll call her S, we looked over and went, oh, and we saw the same person and the same cat. All of a sudden, he turned around, realized that we could see him, and disappeared out. And it was the funniest thing, because he was then, we could sense and see him, because in energy, you can see around corners. He was literally up against the wall of the hallway, trying not to be seen. But of course, we can see around corners. We have a sense of what's around there. It's the funniest thing. And then the cat came around and looked, poked his head around the corner. And we all saw it. And he kept making the banging noises at night. Didn't really settle down that well at all. None of us slept very well. There was creaks and moans and bangs down the end of the house. We weren't bothered by it because we could see who it was. We'd seen who it was. And he was just a bit disgruntled because we could see him, and it upset him. Because normally when people stay at this Airbnb, they don't see anything. So he's used to having his way and just moving about and being a bit shifty and nosy and having a bit of fun with the guests. But no, he couldn't do that with us, of course, because we could see him. So in a way, why are you listening to this? Because you want to know what I know. So it's about seeing guides and loved ones. So how would I suggest seeing that? A, do meditation as much as you possibly can. Cleanse through all your shit. Do some right reading burns, which we'll get onto another time. And just be still, being unfocused but focused. So I guess one way of seeing if anybody is in your room, so what you want to do, you need to project your energy to the corners. So take one left corner at first, see how it feels around there, then move it across to the right-hand side corner of the room. See how that feels. It's about contrast and comparison. So, you know, you want to know if it feels sticky over on the left, does it feel the same on the right? Oh, does it? No, they both feel kind of empty. So you move your intent, your noticing all the way around to perhaps by your bedstead at the back on the right-hand side. How does that feel? Does it feel the same as the other two corners? And then you move it on to the last corner. Perhaps that feels a little denser. Perhaps it looks a little denser. Perhaps it doesn't move quite as much as it does in the other room, in the other corners of the room. So that's about starting to see what's around you. And it's about testing the waters around you, testing the energy around you in different places and different houses. Good place to start is perhaps a church, if you can get it there when it's empty. There's generally spirits or guides or souls hanging around a church because it's such a lovely place generally. Often colds always take an extra layer. I've noticed that. But they also say it's often chilly because that's when spirit turn up. You can tell the temperature change when spirit is in because it's dropped in the room. Come to another story. Remember that one of the circle stories. Anyway, so go to a church and just project and move your energy all the way around the church. In fact, you could even walk quietly, just stop in one place of the church, see how it feels. Does it feel denser around you? What do you see? Oh, there, move a couple of paces. What do you see around you? Is the energy moving around you? Like when you're on a highway and it's hot, you see the shimmer of the sun across the highway, or the shimmer above a radiator as the heat is coming up. See what you see. Maybe you go towards the altar. What do you feel? What do you see over there? That's very different, or can be very different. So this is a really good practice to start to see what's around you and to see how the energy changes, or the energy changes around others. And then perhaps eventually you'll see entities that are latched onto others, or dark shapes that they don't know that's even there, but it's bringing them down. So just see what you feel, or see what you see perhaps in a church, and go with that. Have a listen. Try your museum. That was one of the first places I realized I had spidey sense. Funnily enough, well, it wasn't really so funny, actually. We went off to Te Papa because the mummies from Tutankhamun had come for an exhibit. Oh my goodness. And I step into this room and I suddenly start shaking. And then I start crying. And I can see around this particular sarcophagus where this young girl from Egypt was. And I could see her inside and feel her. And I started crying because she wanted to be home. She didn't want to be carted around the world, having people look at her, having people feel her. She just wanted to be home in her proper resting place. So that's how one of the reasons I knew it started for me, because I started seeing things around inanimate objects, especially with energy or coffins, or go to a chapel perhaps if that doesn't freak you out, a non-denomination chapel or a funeral home. See what you feel there. And I've got to say, a couple of funerals that I have been to, that person has been watching from above at the church. I've seen them. It's quite remarkable. They come in and they see who's around, see who's turned up at their funeral. It'll be quite interesting to them. But in actual fact, it doesn't really matter anymore. So I'm going to leave you with that. Go and see if you can see or feel around in different places or rooms or churches, and see if you can see somebody appear next to you or see an orb, or perhaps your clarity of the auras is getting better and better. Have a great afternoon. Have a great evening. Sleep well. It's good night from me and it's good night from him. Thank you. Good night.